welcome to a bonus There Will Be Dungeons. Yes, that's right. About a quick half hour or so, some time spent with you once a month. And we do it because you support us as a Dungeons Plus member. If you're hearing this later and you're like, oh man, I could have gotten this earlier. You sure could have. Head on over to therewillbedungeons.com and sign up today. Quick note before we get going here. Bo's got a cool idea that we want to talk about real quick where you can contribute some cool stuff to what we do. Bo, do you want to explain how this works and where this should go?
Yes, I do, Scott. Hello, everyone. Players, pretend. Headphones off. You can just pretend. you may have heard through listening to the show that there's a place that Hope is searching for called Pentel Vice. And it has been described as a prison on the show. And I'm inviting everyone who's listening to submit their ideas for the kinds of denizens that would populate Pentel Vice. I want everyone, if they're interested in contributing, to go to our Frog Pants community Discord. It contains our show Discord for There'll Be Dungeons. And there's a channel in there, which is called, like, Make Monsters Community Event. Mm-hmm. So go in there, just start chatting around. It's really loose and disorganized and unofficial. It's official, but, you know, there isn't a site to go to. You just post your stuff in there, let other people see it, chat around. And we're going to populate this dungeon with player creations. And you can do anything, groups of people, individuals, anything that would have a prime material plane presence. So throughout the cosmos of the real world and not the outer planes or heavens, would be potentially here. So there's no idea too small or too large, except for anything the size of Tarrasques and maybe god level creatures. None of those, please. But, you know, CR18 and down, you can look at anything and just submit away. And we may, you know, provide feedback. We may look at them. We have one of our fan artists, it's RC Tang. I don't want to say the wrong name, who's already submitted two drawings for Denizens. And he's more taking an approach there. Yep. He's drawn like great sketches of us in pencil before. So all kinds of people are interested in contributing cool things. I don't know if I'll use them all. Hopefully I will. That's the idea. It's really freeform. And it can be traps. It can be a story. It can be monsters. It can even be maybe some dungeon layout. Submit things, create, and visit us on our Discord.
Yeah, we'll go and we'll check those all the time. Of course, Bo, being the DM, will make all those final decisions, but we're really excited to see your work. So post it in there. And if you're like, well, where am I finding it? Therewillbedungeons.com is a link right to the Discord channel. It doesn't take any kind of invite or anything. You just join it. If you have a Discord account already, you're in. So super easy, sneezy wheezy. All right, let's move on to these questions. These are submitted by you each month at the same website, by the way. And any way you want to get them to us, we're happy to take them. Thanks for the questions. We're going to hand it over to Kristen now, who will ask them of the group. Kristen.
All righty. Welcome, everyone, today to the bonus episode. First message. Hi, all. Love the show. And despite falling a bit behind when pandemic times disrupted all of our schedules, I'm quickly catching up. You've also inspired me to put myself out there and find a group to play with, and we are just having the best time with it. As a new player, I have two questions for you seasoned veterans. Number one, and we'll take this one at a time, how do you take notes on the campaign? I tend to either be so focused on the game that I forget to write anything at all, or take notes in such a haphazard manner that they are indecipherable at the next session. Do you have a system or layout that works for you?
Are they me? Is this me? Did I write in? Because that's me. I'm terrible at keeping notes.
Oh, dude, me too.
I'm horrible at it. I mean, part of me is like, oh man, I wish I had a little baby here so I could sort of say, oh, I don't remember that because Chunks was, you know, whatever. Like, you never use that excuse, but I would use it like crazy, and I would use it erroneously because the truth is I'm terrible at it. I forget to write shit down. Sometimes I do, but then I can't read it later. I am notoriously bad at this, so I'm the worst to ask. My guess is John is like meticulous about it because I see his head go down and a sort of furious handwriting motion happen a lot. So, John, am I wrong? You're like the note guy.
I wouldn't say I'm good at it. I started trying to be extremely meticulous, and it didn't work out great because I was either missing things because I was too busy writing, or I was, you know, kind of the other way around. It's that thing where it's like, oh, well, I wrote this, but I missed the most important part. And what I quickly realized, and this is by no means shade, But I realized that my memory for what happened is about on par with where Bo's is. And so I don't need meticulous notes. I need good enough notes, and then my memory will take care of the rest. Because Bo's campaign does not require, well, I need to remember the book that was on the bookcase and what were the names of all of those books that were lining the shelf. And I think that's great. That's not me throwing shade at Bo. He's just made a campaign where he's taken that pressure off of us. So my notes in the beginning were very detailed. It was like, here's their name, here's their description, here's what they were, here's what they're into. I had all these crazy details about things. Now I have a tendency to just write names, what they are, and then I'll kind of sum up what was going on at the time. And I'll use that and just use it to jog my memory, because I found my memory is about as effective as it needs to be so far.
Well, that's impressive, because I always think that you writing stuff down and then reading it, but you're recalling a lot of that stuff you're saying. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I'll give you an example. We met the therapist, and the only notes I have for that is four gray elves, their therapists, Dr. Zanzifir, Dr. Tindalanthalos, and I have an arrow pointing to him saying Varel, so I'm guessing that's Varel's therapist. Dr. Mahasibi, which has got an arrow pointing to it saying Nash. Dr. Joam Anathar with an arrow that says Stanley. So I've kind of
that. Who's those Stanleys again? Sorry.
Joam Anathar.
Okay. Thanks.
Perfect. Because Bo doesn't write. No, he obviously.
I know. I haven't known. I'm making a joke. Sorry.
That's good. I got
I'm curious about Kyle, too, because he often comes in with the list of accomplishments that I'll often hear and go, oh, yeah, I guess we did do that at some point, didn't we?
Well, that's very much like for the character. So when we started the campaign, I was all over the notes because I was like, oh, man, you know, Bo might pull some DM. Like, do you remember? And, you know, can you solve a puzzle or instantly have it? But then I realized that Varel wouldn't care about those things and wouldn't remember names. So I purposely stopped so Varel wouldn't sort of take over that role in order to maintain his character.
Oh, that's an interesting idea. Taking notes based on what your character...
Oh, right. What they would want to remember. Yeah, well, in that case, I'm living out Nash exactly the way he's supposed to.
There you go.
Well, and it is true, because I play in another campaign, and I played a character where they are not invested in what's going on at all. They have no... They don't care what the quest is. They don't. They have a high-minded idea of what's going on, and that's about it. And I didn't take notes. I just kind of doodled and would occasionally, if somebody said something directly to him, I'd write that down. But otherwise, I'd skip it because for the same reason Kyle said, the character doesn't know that.
Well, the most notes I've taken, I just did a little search here for an episode, was actually John's one-off, weirdly. And it's like a pretty big bunch of notes. I'll rip through this first part here because it's just kind of funny. North of Rivia in Seraphax. Okay, does that sound right, John?
Yeah. I didn't know I had a place called Rivia, but...
I assume it's Rivia. Near the mountains in the town of Andorella. Very religious people. They love gods and lots of superstition. Let's see. The gods speak to the destined. They need me to be a mercenary there. The town seems hastily built. And then finally, I am allergic to cat people, which I think was a reference to Bo's character.
Yep.
Right? Okay. So anyway, the most notes I've ever taken.
That was for what's his name? That was for
Garpoon.
Garpoon.
Yeah, Garpoon. Yeah. Garpoon is allergic to cats and therefore Bo's character, the cat character.
The funny thing is those notes, those are for your and my one-off session. That wasn't in the campaign.
Oh. Because
that was where you learned that you were the, and we talked about this, so it's not a huge reveal, although it might be to listeners, that Garpoon was actually hired to be a bodyguard for Kristen's character.
Oh, right.
That was why he was there. It had nothing to do with the other quest.
Yeah, and she was meant not to know it. I was like a... It was sent to secretly.
How did I not figure this out?
Yeah, freaking cat. But yeah, that's the only time I really ever took like super detailed notes. But a lot of this stuff is just like what I mean, I want to write down what I have on me. Like when I picked up the stupid peelings, I still have a bunch of those, are, you know, on a list somewhere. And
I'm glad they got some action today.
Yeah. Anyway. Back when I had that cloak that had all this needful stuff on it, I kept really rigorous track of what I'd used and what I hadn't. So there's that. But.
Yeah. I want to comment on Stanley's, John's statements. I don't think it was insulting at all. I think it's very deliberate, actually. Yeah. I feel like knowledge that you gain, like there's two types of notes. There's your character notes. Like I assume Varel, Kyle, you have a Word document with where you log your accomplishments in order to expand your title. And that's like a thing you maintain, which is a way, it's just a form of note taking because that's how you remember everything that happened. But also probably real lizard folk would tell their oral stories that way. So it's like it's in character note taking, which is separate from as a player, your notes, right? So it's like, I may not act on this information, but the reason you would take notes is because it happened in weeks prior. So one of the things I did notice is that memories were foggy week to week. So we play shorter sessions and we let a week go by and a lot of details fall off. And I've learned over the weeks what gets retained and what's like, everyone's like, I need a reminder, which it is my job to remind you guys of those things because it's only a week happened for us, but it was like 2 hours ago with the characters. I got to the players are going to be like, so what happened 2 hours ago that I would normally remember? That means the player don't remember. And I've got to be like, I'm human too. So I find that knowledge-based puzzles, when you're trying to show people something like nuanced and small that and reward clever, I think you got to do that within the same session. So I noticed I was planning sessions, you're getting the knowledge, then a week or two goes by. Like even this leg of the adventure, we're going to be on week three in the forest, and I thought maybe it'd be a one-week kind of thing. You just never know how long something's going to take because it depends on what the players decide to do and how it all unfolds. So puzzles that require like attention to detail, not everyone, you know, except for those people that are really good with that kind of stuff, not everyone's really great at remembering those things, and I don't want to punish people for just being humans having fun playing a game. So I tend not to focus on that stuff unless I can think I can do it within the same session. I think it's easier if you have like a whole evening and you're doing 6 to 7 hours or something long to do those kinds of things and make something in hour one pay off in hour six. But it's very hard with the 3 hours that we have to plant something that's very innocuous, seemingly random, and make it an essential thing within that 3 hours. If we have to go to next week, that small innocuous thing nobody remembers because it was small and innocuous, like a book or a note or something. So that's been my thinking on it as well. So I try not, and also I feel Kyle would respond the best to things like that, but he is playing his character, and all my efforts to get him interested into books, he has responded appropriately in character, and I have learned to not try and design things like that for him, even though I think Kyle, if you got to play a wizard, would be out wizarding the world with the best wizard ever. I think you're a wizard DNA person.
Oh. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's your, like, you know, you're playing against type in the show. And anyways, those are my thoughts.
Cool. And part two of this is kind of tied to that whole idea where it's 2 hours in game, but we take a week break. How do you manage to stay so well in character? I find that often I have to deliberately think about what my character wouldn't do in a given situation. And by the time I figured it out, the moment has passed. Do you have any tips on the acting part of the game? And how do you all seem to so effortlessly stay in character?
Oh, geez.
I think we have practice. A lot of, yeah, I think we have a lot of drama background people here, which probably yeah. means we have some skills built up. I know I do, you know, for me, one of the things that I will frequently do, for one, just because I love this game and I love playing it so much and, you know, one time a week doesn't feel like enough. Is that sometimes when I just want to get my mind off of what's going on and focused on other things, I will just talk in character. I will put myself in a moment and go, okay, well, you know, what if Varel was saying this to Stanley? Here's what Stanley would say. Or I'll take a moment from a session that we did previously and I'll maybe interact a moment that didn't happen or something just to kind of see where Stanley's head is at. And it kind of just puts me in that mindset to where it's very easy to drop back in a moment's notice when something happens and just go, oh, well, this is how he'd react. And it's not that I've prepared it. It's just that as you get more comfortable with the character, it becomes second nature to do what they would do.
Yeah, I think part of it is just doing it so long, right? Like, I mean, that's part of it for me. And Nash, I mean, let's be honest. Nash is just kind of a trash sorcerer. He's just kind of a garbage monster. And that's by intention. But it's not like I don't have to jump through any kind of crazy hoops to roleplay that dude. But I do know what he would do in any given situation. And today's episode was a really good example of that. If there's throbbing blue things on the wall, he will try to eat it or smell it or something.
Yeah. See, sometimes I worry that you envisioned your character as a little bit villainous and intense and cool. And then you do things like that in an episode. And I'm like, oh, no, we're okay. Like, yeah, sometimes I worry I put cast you in that role of like goofball.
No, it's like, not you at all.
Scott doing that.
Once in a while, he will take himself very seriously and things will get serious for him. And then he'll go, ooh, shiny. And then something dumb will happen on the side. And I think that was always sort of the intent. It's gotten easier to maintain that over time to kind of balance those two things. And at the same time.
Yeah, it's fine. You know, like I give you opportunities to be serious. Remember when Angela, she said, revealed to you she's a shifter and you were just worried that she looked strange.
Yeah.
You're like, you look like a fish. You weren't mean, but you were definitely concerned about the wrong thing.
Right. But it's concern that he would have, and it would be the first thing on his mind instead of like, no, the real problem here is, you know, this is a life altering thing, should be this serious thing. But he's just like,
oh, everyone's dude, like, it's still weird. The same soul that you love. Why are you freaking out? And you're like, she doesn't look the same.
Different. That's not who I married. Like, there's a lot of that in him. And
that's a real feeling. That's okay. But yeah. Anyways, like your reactions are very like, just great.
Well, I love playing him that way. And I'm glad he is who he is. But I have to admit, you know, it's fun once in a while when we get to the one off with Garpoon was really fun because that's a completely different angle. And doing what I did with Hack Loman is, you know, another bit of difference that just kind of takes us away from who Nash is. But I always, whenever we're doing those one-offs or, you know, spending time with other characters or even the clown, I just long to get back to Nash's brand of, I'm going to shit on the floor and then rain down fire. Like, he's just a jackass, you know, like, and hopefully a somewhat lovable jackass to some people. Like, I hope listeners don't see him as just like a freaking turd stain all the time, because he's not meant to be. He's got a heart of gold.
He does. And I think too, acting, all it is playing pretend. And as we grow up from childhood, a lot of us kind of lose touch with that. But I think those of us that stay in the arts really keep connected with it, because it's like an emotional thing. Playing pretend means you get to pretend to be something and feel those things, emotions, even though they're not your own. Whether that's art, singing, acting, it's all of that is so emotional. So if you're having trouble getting back into that, like John said, play pretend. Like, who's your favorite movie character? Or is there a song that like really gets your blood pumping or makes you feel really down and depressed? Listen to that stuff on repeat, or pretend to be that person on repeat and just hammer it in until you can start pretending to be that person outside of where they exist artistically. And then you can start to have a feel for what it's like to put yourself in a character's body and get back to that pretend pillow fort kind of a thing. I'm the king of the castle, even though I'm 3 years old and still pooping my pants.
That's a great way to
that observation it. About adulthood is like the key there. Adults stop pretending because it's beneath them. It's embarrassing. Maybe they'll do it with their kids or in certain social situations where it's acceptable, but they won't run around acting like fools. But it's how you learned. It's like, oh, I have this learning tool. Well, let me stop using this learning tool because I'm embarrassed of it. And that's essentially why people get scared of, you know, for whatever reason, scared of acting or have that relationship with it. But it's really just playing. And the people that do it really well have like practiced at their art in such a way that, you know, it's believable to people.
Well, yeah. I think there's another layer that happens with gamers because they have so much self-preservation. When they play Iron Man modes or Darkest Dungeon, that they hit D&D and they struggle to play their character because they're too concerned about dying all the time. And that'll hold them back from making those awesome decisions to do a front flip axe attack that could end in a one and your own demise.
I'm picturing Varel flipping with an axe.
Yeah.
His dexterity is awful. I'm not going to try flips. But, you know, there's a lot of harm's way that you have to be put in, and your career is adventuring. So you have to let the character already be dead in your mind so you can enjoy them in kind of a roundabout way.
I agree.
Yeah. There's no winning in there's really no winning in D&D. It's just a story. So this idea that you can play, I guess you can take that and make that as part of your game if you're doing Adventurers League or some group that prefers that ethos. But the shared storytelling side, and everyone has a good sense of improvisation here. They're aware that when things happen, their characters, they imagine a reaction. And I think everyone here is more concerned about reacting true to their what they imagine of their character than trying to win a game. But the characters are trying to survive and beat the opponent. So they just wouldn't think of things like, well, my character would attack here, but instead I'm going to step back 10 feet, move to the right, twirl around because I get an edge in my attack roll that way or something like that. You know what I mean?
Think of Nash with like his spell slots, the way somebody might be with making sure that they never spend the $10 in their wallet, but they jump off a cliff and die, but at least that $10 got saved. It's kind of his attitude. Like, I don't want to spend all my magic right here, but then I'll eat a mushroom that could kill me. You know, like there's a mix of like being tight with your resources for me in this game and, you know, running into the fire. And I kind of, I kind of like it. I don't get to do that in real life.
I loved all the liberal use of polymorph today. Let me tell you.
Oh yeah. That was great.
Oh yeah. Polymorph's a great spell. I love that spell.
It's fun to watch.
I thought of it last night in bed. I was like, we're about to fight a bear T-Rex thing. I'm sure, man, what if I turned into a T-Rex? I could do that. I could make that happen. And then I just saw the guy from Godzilla go and let them fight. And I was like, I'm going to do it.
That's the other trouble with time between sessions. Not that it's a problem, just that if I present a scenario and then we go away for a week, somebody invariably pones. It's like, I found these interactions and we're going to do this. I'm guilty of it. I just don't play that much, so nobody has to suffer, but for sure.
All right, a question for Kyle. When you were planning the makeshift weapons for the gang, did you have all the carcass combinations planned ahead of time, or did you come up with it on the spot? The shield for Nash really cracked me up.
Nope, I was just going over the list. You can make those exact like 7 items and only those 7 items. So I just divvied them out.
Yeah. I loved that. That was a really good one. Good moment.
Superfly Dave gave us a huge list of questions. So we can try and bust these out if you want as fast as possible. First one, how many dice sets do you have? I have 1.
I have 2. One inside these rad cases John sent us, and I use them for, it's funny, I use them for a lot of stuff when I play games with my kids, but I really don't use dice for the show except digital stuff, but I have 2 sets. My daughter has 4 sets.
Now you got that sweet app. You're probably not going to switch.
Well, now that I got that app that gives me roll 20s every 4 turns, then, you know, why would I leave?
Yeah, and I know it would hold up to scrutiny because that guy just basically, when he's going to cheat on your rolls, he turns a switch, it changes your app to the favorable situation. You roll, and then he turns it off remotely.
Right. He's watching it.
I like imagining that the cheating scenario is so unnecessarily complicated. Yeah. Like, just as a joke.
No, that's a good if you're going to have a conspiracy, it's got to be weird, right? You got to go all the way. So
you got to find explanations for everything, no matter how improbable.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. And anything you can't cover, you just say, well, that's just someone made that up. You know, we got them. We know what we're doing.
I have 23 dice sets.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Shut up. You have 23?
I do. Yeah, Scott's the record holder.
Or John, you mean?
I have a bowl of dice. I don't know how many.
Why, John, do you have so many of those? Why so many? Just love to get different ones or what?
One, I ordered a big bag of dice because I was like, well, you know, I want some cool dice. So I'm going to order a big bag. You know, what if I spend a lot of money on one set that I think looks really cool and it turns out it's cursed and I just roll ones with it and it's awful? You know, let's spend that same amount of money and get 18 sets. And then I got a little choice options here. Mm. And then I went ahead and bought the other sets anyway. But I mostly use two. I use two sets for Stanley. If I roll physically, I've been using the app a lot. I have two sets that I use for Stanley, and I have two sets that sit next to that that I use in the other game I play. And really, that's it. But I do have others if I'm doing one-offs. I feel very weird about using the same dice set for different characters.
Yeah, I like how you have used four, so you have 19 backups.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Every dice.
Yep.
Yeah.
Whoever your new character is, you're safe. You're good.
Yep, I'm ready.
Bo, you have a lot, though, right? You're always dropping them.
Not as many as John. Jeez, yeah. I have a bowl of dice that I've collected over my years, so some of these are actually pretty old. But I try not to be too precious about dice anymore. Because you're like, oh, I got this dice set, but everything requires multiple dice. So whenever you have, let's say you have a blue set and it's like 3d6, but you only have two blue dice, and I got to put a different color in with the other dice, I get irritated. When I have special dice. But if I just have a bowl of random dice, then I don't think about it anymore. And I know that's a strange answer, but...
No, that makes sense.
I got to commit to diversity or only roll dice of the same color. Like, if I'm going to commit to having a color of dice, then all of the dice have to match.
Or you got
to
go one way or the other.
Not great about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like it. I like that.
Yeah.
Kyle? How many dice sets does Flynn have?
Who polymorphed Kyle again?
I had to stop blowing bubbles in order to answer the question. So it's a bit of it's a tragedy around here. I have a amalgamation set that is built from my original set that I had got when I was 13. So I've lost many, but I still got the D20 and a couple of them. But otherwise, it's all just replaced with dice from a MegaCon pitcher. Like they had a huge vat of dice and I dipped the pitcher.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
That's, oh my God. That's a lot of dice in a pitcher then.
Yeah. Wow. All
right, Stanley, what's with the dictionary?
What's with the dictionary?
We're jumping questions, Sarge.
Yeah.
No, I like it. That's a great question. He has a dictionary that he carries around, and it's he learned words from it. And I don't know. Maybe one day we'll get into where that came from. Yeah, there's a lot of sentimentality to it. I always feel like I should give somebody something if they took the time to answer the question. If you open up the dictionary, the front cover or the inside front page of it has a sticker on it that says this book is the property of, and written in there is the name Stanley Billings, but it was written ages ago when that book actually belonged to somebody.
Oh, sweet little tidbit for the bonus show, guys. Ooh. And you didn't reveal too much. I have many questions.
All right. Nash, how does it feel being a father?
That's funny. So with my,
pull up a chair.
Having actual kids in real life has informed this a little bit. When I first had my first daughter, I was terrified. I was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. This is, what if I raise a bad person? You know, I used to have these weird fears, these existential fears about how to feel as a parent and whatever. And it used to stress me out pretty bad in the beginning. And then, quickly learned that was just hooey and everything would be fine. So the first birth, I was a freak. And the next one I was like, oh, this is all right. And by the third one, I felt like I was all good. And this was interesting because this was everybody all at once. And so Nash had to figure out how to feel about all of it all at the same time and deal with the shapeshifty business, which was being, hoisted on him at the same time. So he's probably got stuff deep down he's going to have to deal with still that he didn't take care of. He was too shocked by it and too weirded out that his wife looked like a fish now. And that just weirded him out. And his kid was a fork for a while. And then he wasn't a fork. And now he's a fork sometimes again. And, the kids with all their shape shifting is going to be interesting for him. But that's where it probably he's accepted his responsibility. So Nash is all in on, taking responsibility for this, being there for these kids, being there for Angie, all that. But I guess I would say it's not that different than what I felt like, because I didn't, not that my wife suddenly looked like a fish, but this whole experience was just like so life altering at the time that I just thought, well, okay, here we go. This is all new. Can I even do this? Can I even handle this? And yeah, you totally can. And you find it, you know, you find your legs and you're good. And then it's the most amazing thing you ever did. So, you know, Nashville, depending on what Bo is going to let us do, Nashville, you know, have a chance to see these kids grow up to be fine shape-shifting citizens. And hopefully, I don't know, hopefully some of my fathering techniques will probably show up in the way Nash handles stuff. But also it's also very common for me to take off hunting with a bunch of people while the wife is at home taking care of the newborn. Kids.
Maybe, yeah. Maybe don't tie Scott to Nash in that way. I have a feeling Nash is probably doing something Scott wouldn't do, but if you're on record saying that your rearing is similar.
No, you're right.
Child protection services might drop by.
Right. No, you're right.
Like, have you been dipping your, feeding your children glowing mushrooms?
Right. No, there won't be any of that. But
vegetable peelings?
He'll definitely, there'll be moments of struggle where, you know, he's just going to have, he still isn't grappling with, suddenly he's a shapeshifter. He's one of them. Like, what does that even mean? Like, this hunt is done and all of this distraction has been just that, a distraction, and he doesn't know what to do. And I don't know what he should do yet, because he's going to have to face that music at some point.
Yeah.
Figure out who Varel, he is.
Oh, sorry, Varel, if you said, if it wasn't for Bok-Pok Butterfly Effect, you have never gone down the rabbit hole of Lizard King. Where do you think Varel would be now if not for the Boxster?
The Boxster. That's great. I love that.
I think the obvious calling beyond that would have been to be the good character of the group, and he probably would have pursued that paladin business.
Yeah, you were talking about a lot about that early on.
It was a role that needed filled. The party needed that kind of push in the direction, and luckily, like, Varel's code of honor could maintain that pressure and keep the group together. And now he's got like this kind of like, you know, therapy friendship sort of thing going on. So I think it would have been very similar. It's just I'd have levels in Paladin.
It happened organically. I take it your character, the way you imagined it, I don't know, at some point made a decision like, oh, like did something happen to make you? It just feels like I can see that your efforts are more in that direction since leaving Sigil, at least.
It's also a big call around Squirt's death would have hit Varel harder than the character is going to talk about to anybody. Yeah. So he needs to maintain the connections, make sure everybody's safe. And for him, that would turn into be more brave, always be in front, always be keeping the group together, and no stragglers, nobody too weak to join this fight that is unproven.
Yeah. You hear that, underwear? No stragglers.
Yeah, it's like George Jetson's car, man, floating around there.
I just say that because you lagged behind today, you know. For
I totally
no stragglers.
Yeah, I'm coming.
Yeah, no, I do see that. So it's. I think what I'm sort of enjoying, and this is just my observation. I don't know if it's any Will, but everyone here is like into storytelling, films, books, you name it, and now you know theater too. Like into. Understand drama and dramatic devices enough that they're able to kind of pick up cues as to when a decision point occurs for their character, like, or an event, and like that stuff happens internally, so it doesn't get shared on the show. But if you're following the show or you're watching, like I am watching you guys, I do notice when you take an event and you decide to shift things because of that event. I think one of them happened today, and probably nobody except me noticed, and the person who did it, and I'm not going to out them. It's possible. I could be imagining it, but I like that you guys have these four players in particular. I don't know if I imagine all D&D players do it, but their characters really do have secret lives. Yeah. And I'm glad we actually got to talk about two of them, the book inscription, which might have come up on the show, maybe it didn't, and Varel's thinking now, because I think it helps heighten people's understandings of the character when we play it. So I really liked hearing those things.
And this one's for you, Bo. The last few episodes have, in my opinion, been excellent. The tie-in with Nash or N4SH and Stanley was dope, and the explanation of the time barf was great. He said before, you get inspiration for settings from things you watch. What inspired time barf, and more importantly, what are you watching now?
Oh boy. Time barf comes from, in general, my agreement with how time travel and narratives is done poorly, like the Back to the Future stuff, no. And even the Avengers stuff, no. Because these are literary devices meant to tell tales, and they're not actually interested in the science of time. I am interested in time. I remember there was one New Year's Eve I spent alone reading the Wikipedia page of time as a thing that I did, and then I rabbit-holed everything I could learn about time. And I have a tendency to tune into theoretical physics talks and podcasts, and it's all way above my head, but I love listening to it. The one I'm looking at, and I haven't finished in particular, is Eric Weinstein has released his, he's developed this unified field of everything theory that is meant to be progression in theoretical physics over Albert Einstein. Eric Weinstein's big take on things being that theoretical physics has been stuck for 50 or 60 years and hasn't developed anything new. And so he is submitting something new, and I've gotten through the first 10 minutes of it, and I'm like, oh boy. As I didn't take theoretical physics. I just have a passing interest in it. And time is, the fact that time is a measurement in a lot of physics, but that it remains this constant that we all just assume works in a specific way, fascinates me because we can't touch it, we can't smell it, we can't even really measure it. Our measurements are relative to the movement of the Earth and are not an objective observation of time and what it might be. And I like to spend time imagining what time might be. And that entry that I wrote in Stanley's book was an entry I just wrote unrelated to There Will Be Dungeons, as I'm theorizing what time might be and working on the problem in my head. And, you know, I think about things like molecules of water moving in the ocean. Do they always move in the same direction, or do they move in random directions? And does each of those random directions imply different universes even there, because they could be moving anywhere? But then maybe they always have to move that way because the world is a series of rules and things behave in certain ways. And to the human mind, it seems random, but it's actually always meant to be that way. And therefore, everything's predetermined because the molecule is predetermined. And thus, what is time exactly? You know, anyways, I could go on and on and on. I'll stop there. But I tend to write down these thoughts. And then sometimes I'm like, this sounds like sciencey mystical shit. Let me throw out my D&D campaign. And time travel had come up, and it was no coincidence. My vision of time travel is very specific. Time barf isn't just a throwaway joke. I actually think time, if it does branch into different universes, it branches like barf. It branches each molecule, every unit of time spits out however many possibilities it can spit out. And if we're making new universes, then every molecule in existence makes new universes with the randomness of what it might be doing. And you see how you can get lost in all of this thought, and I like writing it down. And that my time travel imaginings are very much a deep part about this of this campaign. Probably the thing I've spent the most time thinking about. So, yeah, expect more of it.
More time barf. You heard it here, folks. It's going to happen.
Oh, and what am I watching? Oh, I already said what I was watching. Okay. The other for time specifically, I just recommend, you know, watching a few YouTube videos about Albert Einstein and theory of relativity and all that.
Nice. Mm. You're a big proponent of the hairy, curly haired German men. Is what you're saying? Got it.
Sure. Yeah.
We got time for one more.
The world is.
Yeah. Exactly. Let's do one more. What else you got?
All right. Cool. I'll take one here off the chart for me. Are you really the big bad and the principal is a red herring? I can confirm that I'm not, but I could see a universe where that happened. Like, I think if, because I, honest to God, thought that when Hope put on the hand and walked away, that was it for Hope for a while. And that's why I kind of cried on the show. So I was like, oh my God, this is the end. So I was shocked that there was more that happened, and now she's even back with the group. So that's prompted a huge character switch that's happening currently.
So you're a big bad. You're just not the big bad.
Yeah, and there are two big ways this could go, possibly more. Hope decides to go evil and really embrace resurrecting the god and getting tossed away like all of his other used things. Or I don't want to say it, but maybe betraying him and finding a way to kill him.
Mm.
One thing, what?
I revealed too much.
Well, one thing I will say is that the fight for a person's soul is dramatically very interesting. So don't be in a rush to answer that question.
Yeah.
Keep that open. I'm just, you can do whatever you want, but you know, fighting for someone's soul is always a fun story. So, you know,
yeah, it's true.
I mean, to me, the fun thing about D&D is that, you know, it's not like watching a movie. It's not, okay, well, we're going to have, you know, level 4 to 5 and it's going to be this nice, beautiful, self-contained thing and everybody's mm-hmm. going to come out better for it and the hero's going to have a lucky lady on his arm when he gets to the end there and, you know, it's just not that. Like, your characters are going to make good choices, make bad choices. They're going to learn lessons. They're going to maybe grow as a person and then immediately the next big event that happens in their life is going to just turn them 180 degrees and just send them off again. And you never know. And even for Stanley, I have felt that there've been times where I'm like, oh my God, he is the worst. And there've been times where I'm like, you know what? It's nice. It's nice to get to play a heroic character. And then one more thing will happen. I'm like, well, he's garbage again. Look, this is how we ended up.
Basically, people are complicated.
Yeah, that's what you're saying.
And interesting characters are complicated.
I agree. We will continue to complicate the landscape of 5th edition rules of D&D. We can count on that.
It's our function in life.
That is what we do. But we love your feedback. We love these questions. Any that we didn't get to this week, we'll forward to next month. Don't worry. We'll make sure we get to everybody's that we can. Each and every time we do this, big thanks for your support and making it possible. And we're glad to do these bonus episodes. We hope you like them as well. Send us your feedback. And get us on the website. We're over there at therewillbedungeons.com. All links are there. That'll do it for us. For all of us, for all of you. We'll see you then.